You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Alrighty, third hour here on the show. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio on this Thursday, week four tonight. Jets and the Broncos. We'll get into that. What's going to be an eyesore? I mean, it is what it is. But we'll get into that matchup coming up a little bit. I mean, so much of the focus has been on Adam Gase. Vic Fangio, not exactly doing a good job out there in Denver either, so we'll incorporate the Broncos angle and what residually may happen in terms of fallout if Gase and the Jets should lose and play poorly. We'll get to that next segment. We're from the studios now, the Rocket Mortgage Studio. Need to know what it takes for a home loan to fit your budget and your family? Rocket Ken, Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio, as I said, on Twitter at Tiki and Tierney, at Tiki Barber, at Brandon Tierney. All right, so let's get back to the NBA here, Teak. It was just, it started so promisingly, and as we started the show today, you know, I told Teak, I said, it was 23-10, and Miami was up. This is halfway, literally, almost exactly to the second, halfway through the first quarter. I said, all right, you know what? Miami's looking good. I've got a four-quarter game. This will be a lot of fun. Let me flip over, check out my Yankees, and, you know, in a tough battle with the Indians, trying to move on, which they did. And I come back, and it suddenly goes from 23-10 to 31-28. And as I rewound it, and I'm like, I had to see, I didn't want to just see the score. I want to see exactly what went awry. And this is really before the injuries, too. Caldwell Pope had a pretty good influence early, hit a couple of threes. Rondo was pretty good early as well, as soon as he, as soon as he started touching the ball and became pretty assertive. But the deeper that this game went, the more discouraging and the more boring, quite frankly, and the more lopsided it felt. It shouldn't feel like a 2-7 matchup, but it feels like a 2-7 matchup.
Yeah, it feels like a 2-7 matchup, and it feels like at every turn, LeBron James and Anthony Davis, really Frank Vogel, had an answer, for anything that the Miami Heat were trying to do. And now the question that you have to ask going forward to advance the story is, what can Coach Spoelstra do? What possibly can he do? Because when it's an X's and O's outplaying, and that happens sometimes in sport, even especially in basketball, it's one thing. You can go back, you can study it, you can figure out what you did wrong. It's another to just be out physicaled and not even really feel like a contest. As we mentioned earlier in the show, BT, easy layups, easy dunks. I mean, nobody's restricting the lane for LeBron James. I forgot who assisted it to him, but he comes down, does that ridiculous. Actually, wasn't ridiculous. I mean, ridiculous in a great way. Like just awesome. Like dunk that just double clutch. I mean, it felt unfettered every single step, especially after that first period. So what can Coach Spoelstra do? That's the hard thing to think about, because it feels like nothing.
I don't think there's anything he can do because, he – oh, jeez. I mean, let's look at some of the things that actually went down last night that a coach can control.
Yeah.
You can't control injuries. All right, that's number one. So now listen, if a guy's already hurt, he's got a pre-existing issue, you could obviously control it by maybe throwing, being extra cautious, but first of all, none of these guys were hurt, and in the NBA Finals, it's go time anyway. So he can't coach around, Dragic's foot or Butler's ankle rolling or Bam's shoulder, so that's not his fault. He can't even really coach around being hammered, absolutely bludgeoned, beaten to a bloody pulp on the backboard, 54-36, based on the sheer size. Can you really coach around Duncan Robinson playing 27 minutes and not scoring a single point?
No.
Well, the only option would be to curtail his minutes, but then you lose something theoretically that has really helped bolster you and to get you here.
Yeah.
Because Duncan Robinson's played very well and he's been very influential on the season. So you got to ride with the young man having a rough night. He'll be better, but if he's not, they're going to get destroyed every single game. So what can he really do? I really don't think strategically, schematically, I don't think there's anything he can do.
Yeah, there's not a lot that Coach Spoelstra can do. And he actually talked about this after the game, BT, the impact the loss has. Now, the only way to get that back is to find some way to stop one of the stars, right? And that's even a dangerous proposition because if you decide you're going to do whatever you can to stop Anthony Davis, we know who LeBron is, right? Don't pretend like you don't know who LeBron is. You know what he's going to do. He's going to drop 50 on you. And he hasn't had to do that in a long, long time, BT. But do you hold it past him to be able to drop 50?
No.
Not me either.
No, but if that even happened, like say they came out and they aggressively doubled AD and they said, you know what?
You're not getting the ball.
You're not getting the ball. When you do, we're going to throw that other guy at you. You're going to have to go around two guys, over two guys, through two guys. You're just not beating us. You know, as I reconsider this, you know, I don't think LeBron would go for 50. I think he might go for 18 assists.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Because somebody is wide open. If you double an AD, you've got to still have...
You got to crash on LeBron.
Exactly. You have to crash on LeBron, and then somebody's open, probably two guys.
That's a good point. He might have 25 assists in that case. Because he's going to be aggressive. If there's no restrictions for LeBron to get to the hole, he's going there. All right, we saw it with the dunk that I was just talking about. We saw it with the countless times he attacked the rim. And in the last series against the Denver Nuggets, what do we say? We're like, LeBron's taking these pull-up jumpers, man. He's taking these like fadeaways. He's not being aggressive to the hole. He's having great games, but he's not being aggressive to the hole. It was a completely different LeBron last night because he could feel the size advantage and the vulnerabilities of that front court the lack of a big front court for the Miami Heat. And they had easy bucket after easy bucket after easy bucket.
There's nothing else they can do. I mean, listen, and we just had Byron Scott on the first hour of the show, which was phenomenal. Three-time champion, former Laker, of course, 15 years as a coach, TV. I mean, a guy's sharp as a tack, you know, polished, just a great conversationalist, great historian for the game. And, you know, he basically said that there is nothing you can do. And he also said that he doesn't think Dragic plays again the rest of the series, which I thought was a pretty aggressive take because everything that I've read was, and again, it's the day after, so obviously things need to marinate. But, you know, right away it was, all right, Bam is doubtful, but expected back for three. Dragic is doubtful with no other real intimation as to what happens after that, and Butler's probably going to be okay. But I did not think that I would hear anybody say that Dragic might not play the rest of the series. Byron Scott actually said, I'm pretty sure that he doesn't.
Yeah. No, and he gave one suggestion, play zone. And if you make, play man if you don't. And so you confuse them a little bit. But I have a feeling in all of those man situations are going to be win Lakers. And so you better make a lot of shots. And, you know, the way that the Heat shot last night, I don't know if that's going to be it's not going to be the case. And they didn't shoot well enough to keep up. They did in the first quarter. But then ultimately, they fell behind. What did they shoot from three-point range?
Talking about Miami? I think it was 30-something percent.
31% from three-point range.
So. Yeah, it's not like they shot 17%.
No,
not good, but it's not horrendous. I mean, it's bad.
They started great, though. Let's not forget. They were 12 of 18 to start.
That's
true. So from that point on, it got really bad.
No, that's true. What did the Lakers shoot from downtown? 40 what?
40, just at 40, 39.5.
See, that's the other thing, too. I mean, it's not like they blew the doors off, which they usually don't. You know, that's one thing that I point to. Listen, anybody could get on the air and say, LeBron had these many points, and this is what Anthony did. No, when I look at the – first of all, you watch the game, and I trust that you watch the game as fans, so I don't need to tell you what you saw in terms of, like, you know, obvious stuff, points and statistics. But I do like to comb the box score, and I've used this term, like, an evidence of statistical overachievement. Because I do think that that represents a decent indication of what could happen the next game or two. Like, if a team that, quote-unquote, is not supposed to win, you know, shoots 13 for 19 from behind the arc, or 22 for 36, like some obscene number. You're like, all right, eventually they're going to come back to their median, and that's where things should go in the direction that we anticipate them going, meaning the team that we think is just simply better should find a way to eventually pull away and win easily. But it's the, you know, it's not like Miami shot a woeful 13%.
No.
Or the Lakers shot a robust 53%.
Yeah.
All right, the league average is right around 37%. The, you know, Lakers shot, I mean, and the Heat shot 31%. And Miami was a couple of percentage points above that.
Yeah.
So,
but the Lakers were 65% in the first half. I mean, they were lights out from 3-point range, and then they made three more the rest of the game because they didn't have to. I mean, it was a blowout at that point.
You know what it felt like, Teak? It felt like, I'll tell you what it felt
like. Go take your shot, kid. Go ahead, man. Get in the game. Right.
If a little bit. It felt like, oh boy, got an old Rocky reference for you. Ready?
Go ahead.
It felt like when Apollo Creed came out at Rocky IV, and he was dancing. He had James Brown, "Living in America." Great scene, by the way. That was awesome. Comes in with the red, white, and blue robe. Wish he was running for president. You know, it was just a great, great theatrics, right? He comes in and Drago's staring him down, unemotional. And he looks good, and he's chopping him up, and he's blistering him with jabs and even a couple of, you know, roundhouses, right? And then Drago's like, all right, it's game time. Now I'm going to destroy you.
Yep.
It almost felt like the early part of the game, Miami was obviously locked in and knocking down shots to their credit, but the Heat were like, all right, stick a few jabs. We're going to size you up a little bit, and then we're going to come out and we're going to flatten you because we know the inherent advantage that we have, which is size. And that's what happened.
Yep.
That's what happened.
Yep, size dominated, you know, in this game when it mattered most. BT, yesterday we talked about the 76ers, and Mike D'Antoni was the front runner. I mean, he was getting hired. I mean, he thought he was going to get hired. Now it looks like Doc Rivers is going to get hired.
I told you that they should hire him over Mike.
Yeah, I think it's the right move because of his culture-building ability, and I think one of the biggest issues plaguing the 76ers is culture right now, and really implementing two very distinct personalities in Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons, and finding a way to marry their personalities into a culture. And I think Doc Rivers has been around long enough to know how to do that, and more importantly, to know if it's not going to work, and then ultimately move on. Probably from Ben Simmons. You know, it's interesting because Jimmy Butler's in this series, and I forgot, who do we have on yesterday that was talking about Jimmy Butler? Oh, AD, Antonio Daniels, saying how Jimmy Butler was right about in Minnesota. He was right in Philadelphia. In Philadelphia, he didn't like the vibe of Ben Simmons because he's not a dog. You know what I mean? He's not going to go after it and fight. And now, he may be a really good player and an aggressive, you know, guard, but there's like a X factor that winners have to have that Jimmy didn't think Ben Simmons had. I think Doc Rivers is the right coach to try to figure out what Ben Simmons has and who he is, really. Because Ben's at this point in his career where it's got to start happening for him. Otherwise, you know, he's going to become expendable to the 76ers, or they'll look for better options to pair with one of the most unique big men that we've seen in a couple of years.
And here's the other benefit, and I obviously agree because that's something I was hammering yesterday, but if you bring in Doc, and I would absolutely hire Doc over Mike D'Antoni for sure, 100 times out of 100 at this point. I wonder, like, even if he can kind of tap into something of Simmons that has yet to be tapped into.
That's a good point.
Even if you make the determination 82 regular season games later that you want to trade Ben Simmons, at least he'll be maybe more attractive to other suitors.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, he's attractive as it is. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah,
Ben Simmons has a lot going for him.
Yeah, because he's a big point guard, and he's
great vision.
Great vision. You play small. He almost can play center. You know, in some regards, like a point center in a sense. So he's got skill set. There's no doubt about that. But I mean, he just doesn't shoot. What star struggles to score? It's like he's content scoring 8 points. You know what I mean?
He's like the Dennis Rodman of point guards.
That's right. He's like, he's content. Yeah, we won. I mean, I'm cool. I knocked down, you know, 2 of 6. Right, I'm good.
Yeah.
Who the hell says that in 2020? You know what superstar says that in 2020? But that's his mentality. And yes, he's a good facilitator, but not good enough to be, you know, just do that. Nobody just does one thing anymore in the NBA.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, not to, you know, literally interpret your words. I actually do think that he is a good enough facilitator, but I don't think that that's good enough in the modern NBA.
Yeah.
Like, what he does exceptionally well. I don't see his facilitation or his facilitating. I don't see weaknesses outside of the fact that he's predictable.
Yes, yes.
You know,
I'm not trying to imply that. Yeah, I'm not trying to say he's a weak facilitator.
Okay, gotcha.
But it's like, it's all he does.
Yeah, I know.
It's all he wants to do.
It's like throw the fastball every pitch. I hear you.
Uh-huh.
You got to mix it a change, even if it's in the dirt. How about this? You could attribute this to, now there was not the debate last night. That was two nights ago. Unfortunately, we've got two more of these circuses debate. Two more. Maybe they could cancel both.
I'm not watching.
I mean, I'm gonna. I mean, but geez, I hope you know what. And a lot of people have said, kind of jokingly, cut off the mics. Cut off the mics when it's not their turn.
I don't disagree.
Cut off the mic.
I don't disagree.
But anyway, there wasn't a debate last night. There was a lot of baseball on.
Mm-hmm.
Early ratings and viewership from game one of the 2020 NBA Finals are down roughly what percent from last year, do you think?
I'm going to say...
Just year to year.
I'm going
to
say 15.
50.
50?
50.
Wow.
From the wrap. I saw it on Twitter. Early ratings and viewership from game one of the 2020 NBA Finals are down roughly 50%.
Wow.
From last year. Wow. That is a wow. Mm.
And it's not going to get better.
Probably not unless it gets unexpectedly competitive. And again, Teague and I really thought Miami had a chance to win a game or two and make this a contest. So much spirit, and we love and respect Miami. They're just too banged up.
Yep.
And the size, when you actually see, and we knew that the size was a huge advantage, but when you see it on the court last night applied, nah, Miami's not coming back from this. And the ratings are in a rough spot. And I wouldn't be surprised if tonight's Thursday night football game similarly has a 50% downtick from maybe last, although that was the Jaguars and the Dolphins, but maybe, you know, week four's rating from last year probably going to be down 50% tonight because the Jets are horrendous. The Broncos are horrendous. Both teams are going nowhere. Both coaches probably aren't going to be here for long, but we will talk about that coming up next. What is the deal with Darnold and what is the deal with both of these teams? We'll get to that next. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. All righty. CBS Sports Radio's toll-free lines, 1-855-212-4227, brought to you by GEICO. Right now, GEICO's offering an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies. That's on top of what GEICO could already save you. So, what are you waiting for? Visit GEICO.com to learn more. All right, Tiki and Tierney here, CBS Sports Radio. A couple of hours away, a little Thursday night football, week four, Jets and the Broncos. You know, Most fans get to, wow, my team's on the primetime stage tonight and I'm going to put the jersey on. I'm going to have the food, whether I'm going wings or pizza, whatever it might be. I'm amped up. I got my quarterback. I got my weapons. I got a chance to, you know, vie for a Super Bowl. That's what the lucky fans think. What Jet fans and I don't think Bronco fans think this, but I think obviously they know they're in a rough spot tonight, clearly, and a rough spot this season. What I'm thinking is what I said to Tiki to start the show. I just don't want to be embarrassed. How pathetic is that? That's where my barometer is. That's my bar. I don't want to get embarrassed. I don't want butt fumbles. I don't want my quarterback seeing ghosts. I don't want to be subjected to memes on social media. I don't want to be horrified when I put on the morning shows and everybody's cracking jokes at us. I actually think that the Jets play well tonight, and I actually think that the Jets win, and I put a few bucks behind that thought. But, Teak, this is the end of the road here for Adam Gase in terms of perception. Now, whether or not Cowherd's right and the Jets have refuted that, and I certainly trust Colin sourcing.
Yeah.
But even if the Jets get destroyed, I don't think Gase will get fired now. I don't.
Well, yeah,
but boy,
oh
boy, what a pivotal spot. It's week four. I mean, how sad is that to be here? And the Broncos are here, too. At week four.
Yeah, the Broncos are a little bit of a different situation because they drafted Drew Lock last year to be, I don't know what they expect him to be because he wasn't a first round pick, but they like him. They liked his attitude, his moxie, his leadership ability at the end of last year, but they're facing, such a multitude of injuries on both sides of the ball. I think Vic Fangio is a little bit more protected than is Adam Gase, who seemingly is having, having revolt in his locker room with guys talking about they don't practice hard, and we can opine all we want about the schemes and how they seem, so staid and boring and, not innovative and not taking advantage of anything. It's not like you're watching Sean McVay's offense or Kyle Shanahan's offense.
You think?
Right. And that's what he was billed as. And so the fact that we're not seeing it is either it's one of two things. One, he can't teach it correctly to his mm-hmm. team, so they can't execute it, or there's a limitation with the quarterback. And whichever one is right, it doesn't lead to a good, next few weeks for Adam Gase. I think more important for the Jets tonight, at least as it pertains to Adam Gase, is that they just gotta play hard. Right? They can't get to the point in the game where it's like their heads are dragging, they feel like they're defeated. And when you give up 36 last weekend, that happens. But you still got to play hard. And if anything, that will allow him to keep his job. If not, then I think what Colin Cowherd has been reporting could actually happen.
Yeah, I mean, listen, Colin, I mean, we've been saying for a long time Gase is going to get fired, obviously. Yep. And we love Colin. I know him well. You know him.
Mm-hmm.
I like his work. I mean, but it's not exactly like he's splitting the atom with that one.
No,
that,
of course
that,
not.
Adam Gase is going to get fired. Well, no kidding.
Well, the reason you would do it is because there's a really good, at least in historically speaking, interim on his staff, and Greg Williams, who obviously turned things emotionally with the Cleveland Browns a couple of years ago with Hugh Jackson when he got fired, and Baker Mayfield came in and took over. So there's a guy there. You wouldn't do it if there's not a guy there,
mm-hmm.
Who could kind of fill the void for the next 12 weeks, but. I mean, this is critical, man. It's win or lose. And let's be frank, Adam Gase just hasn't been a winner over the course of his tenure as a head coach.
But here's the thing, Teague. Not only has he not won, there's a lot of coaches who have not won. Like Cliff Kingsbury was sub 500 in college, right? Mm-hmm. But what he does well, he's known as an offensive guy.
Yep.
They scored points.
And see it.
They just could. But I mean, even in college with a losing
record.
That's
what I mean. But you see his specific impact.
Correct.
Right?
Adam Gase is hailed as this. He's not. And this is why I don't think he's going to get fired anytime soon. Christopher Johnson just called him a genius last week.
Yeah, I saw that.
How dumb does Christopher Johnson look after calling his head coach a genius? That's a quote. Attributed to Christopher Johnson, who's obviously doing his brother Woody's job. He called him a genius, and then a week or two later, you backtrack and you fire the guy. So Gase is not going to get fired.
The last 4 years, BT, here are the stats, offensive stats for this genius. 25th in yards, 28th in points, 2018. 30th in yards, 31st in points, 2019. 27th in yards, 32nd last in the NFL.
Despicable.
No, I take that back. 32nd last in yards, 31st in points. And now, this year, last in both yards and points. I'm not seeing any genius there.
There's no genius. He's horrendous. A genius. He stinks. And he stinks with different quarterbacks and different rosters and different owners. He's just not good. He's a con man. However you want to... somehow he's been able to craft this narrative that he's actually special. He's not an asset to any franchise as a head coach. He's a detriment. and the only thing that, and I got to be honest now, listen, nobody's defended Sam Darnold more than me. Nobody. But Sam, you got to give me something tonight, dude. I mean, Von Miller's not playing, cornerback's out, a couple of other defensive ends are out. You got to score some freaking points, dude. you have to. Who's doing the game tonight? Thursday's is it Buck and Aikman? No. Would it be?
I think it actually
is. Is it Buck and Aikman? Whomever it is, you've got to give them a chance to say at some point tonight, you see, this is the Sam Darnold that a lot of people around football believe can be a franchise quarterback.
Yeah.
If he throws a pick six, telegraphs passes, I'm going to lose it, man. I'm going to have to bail on the kid at some point.
By the way, Buck and Aikman. You're right. It is Buck Aikman.
Okay, good. I want to hear Aikman's commentary. About Darnold, and he'll be real, and he'll keep it honest. And Sam Darnold, and I want to play this cut from Sam. This is one of the things I love about the kid. He takes it very personally. He was asked in the game against the Colts when he threw him two pick sixes, whether or not he let the team down. Here's Darnold.
For me, having two pick sixes, having any interceptions is unacceptable. So to that extent, yes. But, you know, for me, I'm really looking forward to, you know, just continuing to get back to work with these guys. I mean, we have a really good group, a resilient group.
All right, yeah, listen, I respect it. I'm going to give the young man the latitude and the space. You don't have a great group. You've got the worst talent around you in football. your roster stinks. And the guys that you look in their eyes in the huddle have no chance to win. They are C-minus and D-minus level players, period. But you have to say what he just said. But even, listen, if they're playing the Pats tonight, you know, complex defense with Belichick or the Chiefs or the Ravens, or if they're playing the Steelers or if they're playing the Seattle Seahawks or if they're playing one of the Packers, hey, listen, I expect nothing. You're playing an 0-3 team that is beat up as you are. Sam, you got to play well tonight.
Yeah, and that's what we'll look for, and that's really – you know, the problem is the only people who are looking for that are Jets fans. The rest of the country, they probably don't care.
That's true.
There's not a lot to care about in this game. It's unfortunate for the NFL because the Thursday night game is supposed to be a showcase. And when you were looking at this game at the beginning of the season, you're probably saying, all right, Sam, it's Sam and Adam Gase's time to advance. So this game in week 4, they'll have a couple of weeks under their belt. They'll be, you know, at least have a win, maybe two, both of them, and this game will be interesting. Same thing could be said about the Denver Broncos because of how I think a positive people felt about Drew Locke as that quarterback.
Oh, yeah.
Von Miller, the defense was still good last year. I mean, they just couldn't figure it out offensively. They were still good last year. This game was supposed to be something of a showcase for two young quarterbacks helping lead their franchises from mediocrity. Instead, we're going to get mediocrity on top of mediocrity.
Yeah. I mean, America thought, hey, we'll get to see the kid from Baylor, Denzel Mims. Hey, yep. We'll get to see Jerry Jeudy, who is playing. Hey, we'll get to see Cortland Sutton. Nope, he's out. I mean, I get it. It's obviously personal to me. There is no intrigue outside of whether or not Gase gets fired again, which he will not get fired today or tonight, no matter what happens. But I'm with you. That's why you throw a few bucks on it. You got to buy yourself some passion.
I hear you.
You got to buy yourself some passion. Let's get the update from Ack. We'll come back. We'll hit you with the blast after Ack's update right now. Here's Rich. All right, Tiki and Tierney here, motoring toward the finish line, CBS Sports Radio. Time now for the Game Plan for Success, sponsored by Napa. Taking a look at the Tampa Rays and their plan for success. Now, the Rays jumped on Blue Jays starter Hyun-Jin Ryu early and often yesterday. They scored 7 on 8 hits. They just bludgeoned them 2 games. Ryu lasted an inning and a third, throwing just 45 pitches. Tampa went on to win 8-2. They trounced them. The Rays have now advanced to the ALDS back-to-back seasons for the first time since 2010 and 2011. And I know my partner shares the same fear as a Yankees fan because they're playing the Rays. I'm worried. They are a good team, and they seem to have our number, buddy.
And they have a really good skip we've been talking about for the last 3 years or so, that bullpenning. Hey, let's start some relievers and pitch 2 innings, and then we'll go to our starters. And it works.
Yeah, but now they got some mashers. Kiermaier
exactly.
Plays a 6-center field. I mean, they're just a good team. We'll see. I mean, it's going to be a really good battle, but I'm definitely a little nervous. Whether you stop by a locally owned Napa Auto Parts store or Napa Auto Care or visit Napa online, if you need help with your ride, you can count on Napa know-how. All right, Tiki, are you ready for a little Blastville? See what we cooked up here? See what we got?
Yep, let's go.
Let's go.
So many topics, so little time. We give you 5 stories in 5 minutes, but don't take too long or you'll suffer the buzzer. It's time for the Blast with Tiki and Tierney.
All right, see, Alvin Kamara, we start with him. He told the Times-Picayune this week, when you're losing, it's easy to point fingers, say this, say that, but we'll get back on track. Everybody's going to shut up eventually. Is it too early to say Sunday against the Lions is a must-win game for New Orleans?
Yeah, I think it's too early to say it's a must-win for New Orleans. Obviously, they're disappointed with how they've been playing to date, and it's really because they haven't been explosive at all. And so it's one of those frustrating things, I think, more than, you know, like anger that everything has gone awry. I think they're just frustrated. They're used to having crazy explosive offenses and running away with games against inferior opponents. They haven't done that yet.
I'm going to disagree with you here. I'm going to say, yeah, and I get it. You know, it seems a little early to be reaching for that must win in week four, mm-hmm. but I think it's must win for this reason. Drew Brees is not going on the road in January and beating a good playoff team. I just don't see it. I honestly don't see it. So, I don't even think that, you know, Michael Thomas is still nicked up. Drew's not quite what he was. I know that they're good. Don't get me wrong. But even at full strength, I'm not so sure that, you know, they're a 12-14 or even better like they've been for a couple of years now. If they lose this game, which, by the way, they won't, but if they did, the alarm would sound, and I believe there would be justification in reaching for that alarm. You have to win this game. All right, Teak. NBA Commissioner Adam Silver addressed the media yesterday and said a bubble might be necessary next season as well.
Nothing has really changed in this virus, as far as I know. You know, in fact, many states are beginning, I think the majority of states right now, cases are ticking back up again. You know, there's predictions about combination flu and coronavirus season, what that will mean. And so in many ways, we're looking at a lot of the same factors we looked at determining what to do this season.
All right. So we asked the question, how will NBA players react if there's another bubble in 2021? Well, it can't be this kind of bubble. It's got to be a modified bubble. It has to be. It may be it's a regional bubble. Maybe there's multiple. Maybe you designate four bubbles, and you've got, what are there? The 32 teams in the NBA, I always get mixed up. I think it was 30?
30, or, yeah, 30.
There's 30, okay. I know there's 32 in the NFL, 30 in the NBA.
Everybody else is 30.
Okay, so maybe you have 10 teams in each of the four pods or quads, right?
Yeah.
And then, because you're going to have to play everybody at some point, and then after a month or so, maybe you take a week off, you quarantine, and then you interchange the pieces, and you have a couple of teams go to a different site and they bubble that way. You can't have players for 6 months in the same spot like yeah. Disney. There's no way.
This isn't going to be received very well, BT. The season's going to start just after January, maybe late December, January. Did they come to consensus? I think they did, but I can't remember the exact
What's that, Teague? I'm sorry.
When they're going to start the next season.
They don't know yet.
Yeah.
I know.
It's going to be either late January or late December or January or something.
I don't think it's until 2020. I think it might be more closer to February than January 1st.
Yep. So
I really do.
Either way, it's a really short off season. And so, especially for those teams that were deep into the bubble, so this isn't going to fly well. But if it's necessary, I guess they'll have to do it. I don't know. These guys aren't going to want to be in a bubble for this long again, BT. I can tell you that.
I hear, listen, got needs, man.
Yeah, well, not only that, it's got to be the monotony. I mean, we talk about being in Groundhog Day, uh-huh. like just like me and you, uh-huh. because we've been working from home for 6 weeks. But at least we can like go down the street and go golf and do right.
Or take, more importantly, go in the next bedroom and kiss our kids goodnight.
That's exactly right.
Of course.
This isn't going to be received well.
I totally agree. Do you smell what The Rock is cooking? Dwayne The Rock Johnson, new partial owner of the XFL, tweeted a hype video, and he announced that they're back in 2022. Is there anything the XFL can do to be relevant?
Make it like, I don't know. No, I don't think so, BT. Because you can't change the game. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
You can't alter the game so that it's more entertaining with lesser players. Because that's exactly, you know that you're watching lesser players. There's nothing to do about it. So I'm going to say no, not really.
Guys, stop trying to reboot.
I know, stop, exactly.
I mean, after a while, even like the producers of Happy Days and The Brady Bunch and Friends and Cheers, some of the best sitcoms of all time, they learned that these dopey Christmas shows, you know, The Brady Bunch Christmas show, or, you know, that after a while, it's probably time to stop going to the well. It's a horrible product, at least by my estimation, my eyes. I have no interest in it. I will have no interest in it.
Yeah.
Let's put it this way. As much as I love Roddy Piper and Tiki, and of course the great Roddy's no longer with us, if Roddy Piper instead of The Rock was the one who was going to reboot this, I still wouldn't watch it.
Yeah, agreed.
Unless Roddy was on the mic and he was doing the
games. Don't have the sound of this hype video, do we?
I haven't seen it.
So I've seen it, BT. I was watching it.
Yeah.
And it's like, some people see this as a football field.
Oh, God.
This is hallowed ground. This is an opportunity.
Oh,
it's like, come on.
Really?
I swear to you, BT.
Oh, jeez. That's not anything I have any
that
interest
makes
in.
It worse.
Yeah, I got you. Hard pass. All right. Major League Baseball announces that it will allow up to 11,500 fans to attend the 2020 World Series and the NLCS at the Rangers Globe Life Field. Is baseball making the right decision? Teak? I think that's me. I'm sorry.
Yeah, you.
You know what? I believe that they're making
the
right. Yeah, yeah. I mean, listen, you've had 6,000 people at the Browns games. Miami Dolphins have had a few fans. We've had the Jaguars have a few fans, et cetera, et cetera.
Colleges.
Some colleges. Yep. I was just going to say that. I think that.
NASCAR.
NASCAR. Yes, I'm okay with this.
I think I am as well, BT. We know that they're going to be appropriately social distance. Everybody will be required to wear masks and. They're going to do all the right things, and so they need fans. I think the ambiance, it makes it a little bit better ambiance wise, because being in an empty stadium that I did 3 weeks ago when I did UNC, the UNC Syracuse game, it was vastly different, even with just like 8,000 at the Miami game that I went to the next weekend. So it will make a big, big difference.
Okay. What was a bigger surprise yesterday? The Marlins taking a 1-0 lead over the Cubs, or the Cardinals doing the same to the Padres? This one's easy.
This is easy. The Marlins. We talked about this a little bit yesterday. The Cardinals are a good squad. They've always been a good squad. Even when they have, you put it in quotes, a down year, they're well managed. Their farm program's good. They bring up the right kind of players. So the Cardinals beating the Padres, who are upstartish in a sense, is not surprising at all. The Marlins, though, is definitely.
The Marlins are a pretty good team, but yeah, that's the answer for sure. Listen, the Cardinals have a great postseason pedigree, and they've had it, you know, going back, I guess, the 40s, that would be, maybe even before that. And the Padres haven't been there in so long. It's the Marlins. The Marlins winning it. The Marlins being here is a big surprise, even though, again, their talent's better than most people think. There's a lot of athletes out there. But to win and to maybe send the Cubbies into the offseason, that would be some feather in the cap of Mr. Jeter. And I'm really happy for my guy, Donnie Baseball, my favorite, my idol, my all-time favorite athlete, Don Mattingly. I'm happy Jeter gave him a shot. And even if they lose two straight, it's been justified, and Donnie's going to be back, and the Marlins' future's bright.
Time's up. The blast is over for another day.
All right, Teak, this escalated quickly.
Yeah.
After a rapid courtship and negotiation, Doc Rivers has reached an agreement on a deal to become the next coach of the Philadelphia 76ers, a Woj bomb. Drop the bomb on me.
Not
remember
surprising.
That song?
Yeah, I do.
Baby. Adrian Woj. No, I'm not surprised either, but that's it's a smart move by Philly. Much better than Mike D'Antoni.
Yeah, I know. Just skill set-wise, I mean, coaching set-wise, I think it makes more sense than Mike D'Antoni, who we talked about, BT. He's run one system. Maybe there's some variations in it, but it's been basically the same thing for the last 15, 20 years. And that the personnel in Philadelphia doesn't fit what he does because they don't have any shooters. So it makes more sense for a guy like Doc who can come in and look at, evaluate, and maybe help change the culture of a Joel Embiid, Ben Simmons partnership marriage if it still stays that way. So, yeah, I think this is the right move.
I just want to pull up their salaries here. I want to see what is coming off the books. I mean, that Horford, they gave Horford 4 years, didn't they?
Yeah, Horford's big and
4 years they gave him. Ugh, that looks bad.
Yeah, it does.
Let's see. Philadelphia.
He looks done.
He does. Philadelphia right now, I mean, although this does, but just to give you a little perspective, 2019-2020, sixth in payroll at $133 million. This is not good. Next year, the number one payroll, 147 mil.
That's because Tobias Harris also.
Yep, and they've got, that's more than Golden State with all their stars. That's more than Brooklyn with Kevin Durant and Kyrie. That's more than everybody. And when you actually look at who they have, let's see, in 2021, no one's really coming off. I mean, yeah,
they got to trade. They got to trade Ben Simmons because they just paid him, right?
Dude, Al Horford. I didn't realize Al Horford. I know it was 4 years. I didn't realize he's making almost $30 million a year.
Yeah.
Did you realize that?
I did not.
$28 million?
12 years in as well. You know what I mean? This will be his 13th season next year.
$28 million?
And he's making $28 million. They got to trade. There's no way they can. It's untenable, right? They got to move a contract. So nobody's taking Al Horford at this age.
No.
It's Ben Simmons or Joel
Embiid. Or Tobias Harris.
Or Tobias. Yeah, Tobias Harris could be.
But he's making $35 million.
Yeah. He will be interesting to somebody.
Not at $35 million. Interesting. Unless it's a complete reboot. Unless you throw in some great assets. Philly's going to be good.
Tobias is a good. He's a good player, though, Tobias Harris.
He's not $35 million good.
No.
Not even close.
He got rewarded for what he brought the last couple of years. Not this season, but the previous seasons. And so, you know, it was the going rate. It is what it was, but they're in a tough spot, really tough spot.
And you don't, if you're Doc, because you would have had other opportunities, you don't just take a job. This game's great, by the way. The A's have come storming back. They're up 5-4, bases loaded, play at the plate, 6-4, pardon me. Wow. That's great. They were down. I mean, I don't really have an interest here, although, you know, living in San Francisco and going to a lot of A's games, I would like to see A's fans get rewarded. But the White Sox are a great story as well. This game has been crazy. They were down 3-0, and they've scored 6 of the last 7 runs. This game is pretty good. I would think with Doc Rivers that they sat him down and they said, all right, Doc, listen, once we get past how many years you want, what kind of money, okay, yep, we'll go with that. What would you do with the roster?
Yeah.
He had to unveil a grand plan. It's not like, well, let me just come in and deal with all of it. He's got to have a plan.
No doubt. You know? There's no doubt about it.
All right. T, great show today, buddy.
Certainly. Enjoy your Jets tonight.
Think they win? Do they win?
I think they do.
I think they do, too.
Denver got nobody playing, dude.
It's the only reason. Trust me. I'm well aware. Everybody have a great Thursday. Tomorrow, we'll see you Football Friday. Safe, sensible, sane. Peace.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.